Okay, so a new super virus enemy is interesting, but my two bobs is really where it's going to be at, right? Welcome to Hyperspace Broadcasts, a podcast where we discuss our memories of a specific Toonami program before watching it and trying to determine if it's worth revisiting or best left as a distant memory in the shadowy halls of our collective past. I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And this week we're talking about Reboot Season 4, or I guess alternatively Reboot something Damon and Reboot
Damon
My Two
Rising.
Bobs. Yes, Reboot Damon Rising and Reboot My Two Bobs.
Yeah, so I guess Season 4 was made as like movies a bit after the fact and then aired as Season 4. Like, they split into 8 episodes. So that's what we watched.
Yeah, my understanding is that it was split for airing in syndication, but yeah, was originally made as movies. So basically we have two more or less distinct plot lines that, you know, the end of one hints at the next one, or I guess teases it. It doesn't really hint at it. It's pretty direct. But as an overview of those plot lines, I mean, essentially the first movie concerns Damon, who is this character who is like a super virus, who was sort of teased or hinted at in a couple of episodes where the Guardians are going bad because they've been infected by this super virus.
Right, yeah, that was back in Season 3, I believe.
Yeah,
just kind of hinted at and not resolved there, and then now finally comes back where they're preparing for Damon to invade the system.
Yeah, and so Damon is this sort of, I guess, young-ish girl, kind of. Like, that's her form anyway. And I believe she's French. She speaks with a pretty distinct accent.
Yeah, pretty thick French accent.
Yeah, her like minions all there's this sort of religious iconography and this religious theming with her.
Yeah, kind of a religious, like, kind of Catholic Renaissance, kind of not Renaissance, but maybe more medieval Catholic kind of vibe. Like, it's this big, like, this her like lair's this big monastery kind of thing, and her like main servant guy wears these robes, and I don't know, he kind of looks almost...
Yeah, and is named Deacon.
Like, yeah, and he's like a knight, yeah, almost. Like,
well, he's a deacon.
No, you know. Yeah.
But she, you know, essentially she infects Mainframe, and she's been infected most of the net. So the first... And yes, this is the point where the net and the web are actually distinguished specifically. I think they were also always meant to exist as two separate entities. We just got kind of confused by it, but
the net
and the web are definitely different because she is infecting the net and the web is basically not mentioned.
Oh, still confusing.
I don't know. I mean, this is kind of a stupid metaphor because, or a stupid comparison rather, but going back to Warhammer 40K, the impression I get is that the net is kind of like space in general, whereas the web is kind of like the warp, if that makes sense. Like,
it doesn't, but go on.
They're two separate planes, I suppose. That's the real, you know.
Well, that's kind of how they describe it.
Of reality.
And that's kind of how they describe it in the show. Like, oh, the net and the web, yeah, they're two different planes of the same kind of connectivity or whatever. It's like, okay, sure.
Yeah, right.
In the one like sentence in which it's actually addressed, which surprised me.
Yeah, but so Damon is infecting all this stuff. Essentially, she tries to take over Mainframe. She captures several members of the main cast and infects them. Hexadecimal gets a new form and loses her virus powers.
Yeah, she becomes like full Sprite, and her new form is like, her new form, she just turns white, and it basically just looks like she's wearing like white wedding bridal lingerie, which is weird.
Yeah, it's she's white. You get and the gold. Feeling. Yeah, right. You really get the feeling with these episodes, or at least I got the feeling that A, the writers were happy to no longer have any real censorship whatsoever. There is a decent amount of sexual innuendo, especially in the Rise of Damon movie episodes, I guess. And also, there is like a pretty decent amount of the animators just straight up making their characters, specifically their female characters, in very little clothing. Like, there's a whole sequence with Dot as this kind of Egyptian sort of Ushabti, I think that's what it is. And she's basically just wearing a bra, and that's, you know, like some pants.
Now, I will say that outfit I read is a reference to an Elizabeth Taylor movie from, like, the 60s. But...
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay, that makes sense.
Yeah. But, yeah, you,
I didn't even think about that.
Genuinely a bit more innuendo and a bit more sexualized characters. Yeah, Hexadecimal looks weird, but...
Yeah, she does. There's really no getting around Hex's new design looks very strange. And it's just... It's weird to hear her voice coming out of something that looks so distinctly different.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like... It's like if Principal Skinner just started talking like Ned Flanders. Like, if he just had Ned Flanders' voice. It's about that weird.
Yeah.
It just sounds wrong after all this time.
Why haven't they had, like, a Treehouse of Horror? And God knows, they probably have. But why haven't they had a Treehouse of Horror episode where Bart and Skinner switch bodies? I feel like that'd be fucking perfect.
Yeah, you're right. That is actually, like, a pretty... I'm not sure it would really be horror, though. That's the problem.
It's good enough, though. They you know, they stretch
it's,
it.
It's good enough. For Treehouse of Horror, at this point, they're running out of ideas.
At this point, it's like Treehouse of extra stuff. I mean, no, there's always horror elements, but sometimes they'll just do more fantastical shit, too.
Well, that's usually... I mean, they'll have those weird episodes where it's like, here's three stories that are themed around, you know, like the Bible or whatever.
Yeah,
you could
do
that with 90s movies. So you could have, I don't know, Freaky Friday and, like, Parent Swap, I guess.
What the fuck is Parent Swap? Is that a...
You're not familiar with that movie?
You mean Parent Trap?
Yeah, I do.
You fucking idiot. Not like how dare you not know Parent Trap.
Yeah, Parent Swap is probably some awful reality show that ran for one half of a season before it was canceled.
Yeah.
Oh god.
What were we talking about? Reboot? Oh yeah.
Yeah, we were trying to talk about Reboot, but Damon takes over. Bob, because he's been merged with Glitch, is unable to reboot inside games and is also sort of fading out of existence.
Yeah, like Marty using McFly. His powers causing him to fragment is what they're saying. Like, so if he keeps using his powers or rebooting and stuff, he'll probably fuck up and die.
Yeah, we also get some backstory about Twin City, which is where Enzo and Dot are from originally.
Oh, yeah.
Their father, who is named Wellman, I have him in my notes
as
Dad Matrix, because that's all he is to me.
Yeah.
He has a theory about the net, basically, that, you know, he's kind of a Carl Sagan type.
If you want to picture him,
that's what Carl Sagan was like, right? He said other planets exist and people didn't believe it.
And everyone's like, holy shit.
What?
And if you want to picture him, he's basically Matrix, but not buff and a dad. So
yeah,
you can probably, you can probably envision it pretty well.
Yeah, but essentially he and all of Twin City gets blown up in this sort of convoluted thing where, you know, there's a flashback of Bob getting trained as a guardian. He is going after this virus called Kilobyte, who somehow morphs straight into Gigabyte.
Yeah, that's confusing.
Yeah, but, well, it actually makes sense, though. Yeah, it makes sense because then Gigabyte gets split up accidentally in a portal. The split blows up the whole city and nulls everyone there, including Wellman Matrix. And it's implied that that's where Lost Angles came from. Like, Lost Angles right. is the remains of Twin City. And also, it brings back a sort of non sequitur reference from early in the show, which is that Megabyte has a null that he keeps because the null is his father, while that father is Wellman Matrix, because he kind of gave birth, in a sense, to Megabyte right. Hexadecimal by having a portal that split Gigabyte in half into those two forms. And that's also why they're brother and sister, technically. So that's a very technical explanation of how those characters came to be, but basically it's some backstory that actually fleshes stuff out that was but not really done anything with.
And I did love that with that they did it kind of just an 80s joke where it's like in the background, what's that song? Is it Cars or whatever? It's like da-na-na-na, da-na-na-na.
Yeah, I know basically that. Like a, I don't know what that's called.
Yeah, basically... That's playing in the background, and like Dot's Diner is just getting constructed, and Dot has this absolutely like ridiculous rainbow 80s getup, hairstyle and like everything. And Enzo is like a tiny child, and his number is 00, and Frisket's kind of a puppy. It's just like kind of a cute way to start the all of it. Actually, it's kind of the first. It's the first scene of Damon Rising, but
which. Now that I think about it, doesn't really have a whole lot to do with Damon herself. That whole subplot is kind of not connected super.
No, not well, really.
But it's some nice backstory. Damon takes over, then she becomes something and spreads throughout the entire net. They have to find some solution.
She becomes she reveals that she is a Kron virus, which is a. I don't know, something from Unix or something. I'm curbing this from the excellent Reboot Wikia, which has some articles about each thing. But it's a Kron, as in Kronos, as in time. It's like a time-based background utility thing or something. But in this case, Kron virus, she's a timed virus that, like, a time bomb, basically. And she infects everything, and then when her time comes, she causes all of it to deactivate, I guess. Oh,
okay, yeah.
And she does it by like forcing everything she's infected to start chanting in binary. And what they're chanting is they're chanting a countdown 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, but in binary.
Oh, that's interesting.
I of course did not realize that watching it. I don't know shit about binary, but yeah.
Yeah, I feel I feel like that's all interesting stuff. It is also something that someone with no familiarity with. Say that specific Unix program or binary, it would just go over their heads completely because it went over mine and
mine too.
I was fairly confused by what exactly was going on at that point. I mean, I knew that bad things were happening, obviously, but it's kind of like, what? Okay, the hourglass on her shoulder just filled up the bottom, and that matters, even though we haven't seen it any time before now.
Yeah.
And then she just kind of disappears, and it's like, what's going on exactly? But the way they fix it is by essentially manufacturing a cure of some kind, which they put into Hexadecimal, because as a virus, she can spread across the web, or the net, rather, instantly. And yeah, so Hexadecimal's gone, everything's saved, and the last thing we see...
Pretty unceremonious ending for Damon, though. It's like Damon's this huge deal for these first four episodes, and then she's like, oh, I'm about to go off, and then like she disappears and spreads this shockwave through all of the internet and all this system, and then Hex is like, well, I could do this, I guess. I have to sacrifice myself, but I'll do it. Okay, see you later. She goes, flies off, sends a bunch of Hex masks everywhere to infect everything and with the cure, basically. And yeah. That's it. It's like, oh, everything's better.
Yeah, right. It is a weirdly... And also, given that Damon had some buildup, it was kind of strange how... Well, I mean, prior to this is what I mean.
Prior to the season, not much buildup at all. But this whole... The entirety of the first three episodes lead up to Damon coming into the system.
Yeah, I suppose that's true. I don't know. It ends a little limply, but it does fortunately end with Dot proposing to Bob, who is kind of dying. And by Bob, I mean Glitch Bob. And that's an important distinction.
Yeah.
Because then Ray Tracer just comes out of a portal with old Bob from, you know, season one.
Complete with the old voice.
Yeah, who has the original voice actor voicing him. And so that, of course, leads into My Two Bobs, the essence of which is that the Bobs are kind of fighting over Dot.
Oh, and and let's not forget, fucking, the second that they teleport in, Tracer and Bob, I'm like, because he's yeah, I'll marry you or whatever, like Bob says we'll marry him. And then Tracer comes to the portal, and I was just about to say, like, oh my god, if Ray Tracer says, marry Dot, I don't think so, I'm going to lose my mind. And then Bob comes through, and he goes, marry my girlfriend? I don't think so. And the episode ended, yeah, and I lost my mind.
Possibly the best version of the I don't think so catchphrase employed by this show. But, yeah, the plot of My Two Bobs is fairly self-explanatory, really. Bob and Glitch Bob are sort of competing over Dot. Dot is indecisive about which one she wants to, I guess, marry.
Right.
And eventually, Glitch Bob sort of freezes himself. He's trying to split himself up from Glitch because that's part of the reason that he's, you know, losing his powers and fading away.
Well, it's also ostensibly part of the reason that Dot can't really relate to him as much, because the other one looks like classic Bob and he's all like, kind of mutated and stuff from the web, and has this crazy armor and looks different, and he wants to demerge from Glitch. And so, which he goes through this one whole episode, I think it's like, I don't know, the penultimate episode or something, he keeps going through these different ways of teleportation, trying to cause accidents to like make it so that he splits. So like the first one, of course, is the fly. Like a total reference to the Fly.
The teleport chambers are exactly identical to the Fly.
Right.
So he has three of them to try and split himself up. It doesn't work. There's Star Trek transporters, which similarly don't do anything. And then eventually he decides to try to use basically the method that they used to split Gigabyte back into hexadecimal and megabyte.
Yeah.
And that just kind of freezes him.
It's
so
weird.
The Guardians take
him. It backfires and explodes, and he flies out, and he's like frozen in this like... He's frozen in the Han Solo and Carbonite pose, for one thing. Like, of course.
Yeah, of course.
Gotta put a reference everywhere. And he's like frozen in like black and like... This like black glass almost looking kind of stuff.
I mean, it's like a star field.
It is, yeah, the material is kind of black glassy, but it's got like a star field inside of it, and it's all like floating and weird. It looks really
bizarre.
It's
kind of like the Taken in Destiny, actually. Now that I think about it. Yeah, remember that shit?
I haven't thought about that in a long time.
So Glitch Bob is frozen. Dot chooses regular Bob, partly because he's still, you know, alive.
Glitch Bob is ditched.
Fucking... I don't know. I don't think that Dot had any obligation to hold out for Glitch Bob, the person she clearly wasn't going to choose in the first place.
Okay. What she was, though, before second Bob came in and like and said, I don't think so, and I don't think so to their whole relationship. But I don't know. It's just like you'd think there'd be a better time to, like, you know, maybe like wait a week and see how this other Bob, if he survives, see how the Bob, you know, the main Bob survives before being like, nah, I'll just marry you instead.
But the whole thing of all of these episodes is that both of them are the main Bob. Like,
yeah,
it's basically like the episode of The Next Generation where Riker is duplicated.
Yeah, well, they didn't immediately take on like the shitty duplicate Riker as like their new captain. Be like, this one's better.
I mean, you've got a point there, but the point that I'm trying to make is that essentially, with the exception of the stuff in the web, old Bob and new Bob are indistinguishable from one another, like, experience-wise. They are the same person.
Yeah, I guess so.
So it's not completely illogical for Dot to choose old Bob. I mean, he's still Bob. It's not like he's a fake copy, for example. But,
yeah. By the way, he is.
Yeah, of course.
Spoiler.
I mean, there a bunch more shit happens. Glitch Bob gets revived and also split from Glitch. All of the key tools come back, which, you know, they left the Guardians when they're infected by Damon, so that's kind of a big deal, I guess.
Yeah.
Now, non-Glitch Bob, but degraded Bob, stops the wedding between regular Bob and Dot. And, by the way, this is annoying as shit to talk about,
yeah,
frankly.
It is really hard to explain.
Because it's not that it's hard to explain, it's just stupid that I have to have these qualifiers in front of characters.
Yeah.
And there are two characters that have duplicates now. You have Little Enzo and Big Enzo, or Matrix.
Right.
And you have regular Bob and Glitch Bob / degraded Bob. But what ends up happening is that it's revealed that new regular Bob is actually a degraded Megabyte.
Yeah.
Who's come back seeking revenge.
He has Trojan horse capabilities, which, you know, apparently means he can transform into any form. So, right. And there's basically no foreshadowing of this at all. There's not even a hint that, like, oh, this other Bob could be bad. Like, no, he seems completely like the original Bob.
Yeah, they don't really do a good job of setting up that there might be something amiss outside of the fact, you know, the simple idea that there are two Bobs. But again, being someone who watches shit like Star Trek, I'm kind of like, okay, that's not that big a deal. You know, like, whatever. You have a duplicate now. Figure out how to deal with it. It's not necessarily sinister.
Yeah, right.
But, of course, in this case, it is. I guess Megabyte was trying to marry Dot under false pretenses just to be a dickhead. Like,
yeah, not really a description. I guess he was going to basically show off eventually. Like,
yeah, he's going to get revenge, I guess, which is obviously super creepy, but it's just a weird motivation. But there is very little to no foreshadowing that Megabyte is actually regular Bob.
Yeah, or that
there's
Megabyte's
basically nothing
coming back at all or anything like that. I guess there's slight indication in that you have some Megabyte binomes, some ex-Megabyte binomes who want him to come back as their neovirals, as they refer them to, in a slight nod to the Blues
Neo-Nazis.
Brothers. Neo-Nazis, yeah.
Yeah, so Megabyte comes back, he takes over the principal office and kidnaps Enzo while everyone's on the run, and that's it.
Yeah.
That's the end of the series.
They really wanted to make another movie, or maybe another two movies, I think, and they never could.
Yeah, at least another one. Which is the kind of thing that's frustrating on one hand. Like, you know, it's a little ridiculous that it's just, oh, now it's over because we couldn't get this other movie made. But at the same time, it's the sort of thing that I take a really stupid, sick pleasure in when something presumes that it's going to have a sequel enough that basically an entire movie is just there to set up a sequel, and then the sequel doesn't happen. Like,
I guess. I didn't take any pleasure in this.
Yeah, it's harder for reboot because I've actually enjoyed this show for the most part. But also, it does bother me on some level that my two Bobs exist only to set up another movie where, you know, they get back at Megabyte. I mean, that's literally its entire purpose.
Sure. And in that sense, it makes more sense as four episodes of a show than as a movie.
Yeah, sure.
And, you know, we of course skipped over, but there's lots of, like, games and stuff throughout all these episodes.
Yeah, right. Well,
some more
backstory
stuff. But, yeah, let's talk about, like, yeah, what the about highlight moments and lowlight, the zenith and nadirs of reboot season four. Definitely the low point of this season is how much Mike TV is in it. It's as if they as if they unlearned their lesson from seasons 2, 3, and 4, or 2 and 3, where
or 3 really, where he's barely in it. He has like a cameo.
He shows up as a cameo at the last episode. As if unlearning that Mike TV is in this a decent amount, and he's pretty annoying. He's not his worst. He's not season one bad, but he's still pretty bad. He is like captured by Damon pretty early on and does this like shitty televangelist impression that is really annoying and does this whole sing along and stuff. That's probably the worst part of season four for me.
Yeah, that I will kind of agree with that. In the interest of keeping things a little bit diverse, I will say that for me, the low point is that there are this season is full of pop culture references, and obviously all the seasons have been, but this one, and maybe it's just because it came out in the early 2000s and that's when I was, you know, aware of pop culture for like the first time.
Yeah.
So all of these references feel incredibly dated, but I mean, there's an Austin Powers reference. There's like
you can't get more dated than a fucking Austin Powers reference.
There's like a quote from a line from The Matrix. There's a whole episode where the game is basically Pokemon. It's just a lot of stuff that just screams late 90s, early 2000s, even harder than fucking Todd McFarlane Enzo. Like,
right. I mean, it was timely at the time, I guess. But that's kind of the risk you take when you make all these pop culture references. Like, you're going to make your shit appear dated in the future. Then again,
specifically,
they were destined to be dated in the future, or be dated in the future, because it looks so dated nowadays. And I think they knew that.
I guess that could be true. But I don't know. Like, it is a little grating to see. The Austin Powers one is especially egregious. It's like if it started referencing Borat. Like,
yeah, right.
I haven't seen Austin Powers, to be fair. I've seen parts of it. The parts I saw I thought were pretty funny, but that is not exactly a movie that people are still like, man, that was perfect.
No, it's dated as all hell, but I did really like in that, because they enter a game that's Austin Powers, basically, and they reboot and stuff, and they don't spend too much time on it, which is good. And I do really love that at the end of the game, Austin Powers, who is the sprite, is basically just like
the player.
User. Oh, sorry, not the sprite. He's the user, and he basically fucks up, and he just like looks up and looks at the camera. And he's like, "Oh, luck don't fail me now." And then Matrix just fucking shoots him in the head, and the game ends. I just thought that was a really good way to end it. Just like, yeah, fuck this. I don't want to hear this anymore.
It's a decent way to do it. For highlights of this season, obviously Megabyte coming back is sort of a highlight for me because I sort of missed Megabyte. I felt like the whole Damon thing was something that didn't really have the necessary build up to be that interesting as a final showdown. Compared to Megabyte, obviously, who's been with us since the beginning of the show. So seeing him back again was nice, although obviously not having any real conclusion to his arc is shitty.
Yeah, for me, I didn't totally care for Megabyte coming back. I love Megabyte. I feel like there were better ways that you could bring him back, and sometimes I do just kind of want new big villains. Because it just seems like they find an excuse for Megabyte and Hexadecimal to keep coming back. and you know, this is one of those times. But it was interesting, so at least there's that. As far as a highlight for me, I kind of like the religious undertones or overtones. What kind of tones are these?
It's definitely, I would say, it's an overtone. It's not really even subtextual. It's very blatant.
Sure, but I
right
like
down to there being a fucking gospel choir. I mean, for Christ's sake, it couldn't be more obvious.
Besides that shitty moment, I do kind of like the religious overtones of Damon's infection. How everyone's just like, "Oh, Damon's here to unify. Damon is the word." And when they become infected, they just kind of become like a bit more peaceful, but also just keep talking up Damon. I kind of thought that was an interesting angle, and also the opening of the episode My Two Bobs, which was just a spinoff, a parody of sitcoms where they basically just like, oh, everyone's walking into dots, and there's an audience in the background. There's a, you know, quote unquote live studio audience laugh track kind of thing going on. And I thought that was really well handled and actually really funny.
Yeah, I had forgotten about that particular moment, which is actually quite well done.
Yeah.
There's like a point where Enzo sticks his face in the camera and just drops all of his catchphrases one after another, which is awesome.
Yeah, right when he walks in, Kid Enzo.
Yeah. And of course, when Bob, you know, when regular Bob walks into the diner, there's cheers and applause from the quote unquote audience. It's pretty well done.
But
it's
about
as Bob well done
in,
as it.
When Glitch Bob walks in, it's just like, yeah.
Yeah.
It's fucking great.
It's about as well done as that kind of sitcom parody gets, generally, I would say. I mean, it's pretty good. It's a good job of that. But let's get to the break. When we get back, we'll settle the bet finally, and we will talk about our thoughts on the show overall.
An all-new episode of Reboot.
No, this can't be happening.
As a virus threatens to destroy the mainframe.
I've heard enough.
Every defense will be tested. Don't miss part one of Damon Rising. Next.
Incoming aid.
Hey everyone, just here to tell you about some other ways you can help support the podcast if you so choose. Subscribing on Stitcher, TuneIn, iTunes, or Blueberry, or leaving a review on iTunes helps us know that you're listening and enjoying the programming. Also, it tends to boost our listing a little bit, which will help draw new listeners. So if you want more people to join this little club, I guess, that we have, that would be one way to help do it. Of course, just by listening, you're doing us a massive service. But if you want to interact with us, we are both on Facebook at facebook.com/HBpod and Twitter at HBpod. On both sites, we tend to interact with anyone who sends us messages or tweets at us. And we post screenshots, videos, that sort of thing, multiple times a week for whatever series we are currently watching. The next episode will be up on July 5th. So after your patriotism, I guess you can, well, assuming you're listening in America, that is, you can enjoy us talking about Super Friends, which is what we're going to be talking about on that particular episode. Anyway, we will be back to our thoughts on Reboot Season 4 in just a moment.
Two Bobs?
Next on Reboot, a new version of Bob emerges, and Dot must make a difficult choice.
Hey, who's here?
Which Bob is right for her?
I don't know.
Find out next. Boot up again.
So, like, the Pokemon anime parody game that they're talking about is called Ponsu Hebi X, which literally translates to Underwear Snake X.
Great.
So, yeah, classy.
Which, to be fair, is... Yeah, which to be fair is Pocket Monster, sort of.
Hey, it's a good point.
You know, yeah, Pocket Monster could easily be alluding to a dick. Now that I think about it, I never really thought about it in that sense before, but we're back, obviously. And let's talk about our impressions of the show as a whole. Or I guess we'll start with our impressions of season four.
Sure.
And then sort of move on to the show as a whole.
So season four is interesting. I think overall I liked it not quite as much as season two or three, but definitely more than one. The visuals improve again, something I noticed, especially like facial animations are a bit more complex, a bit more nuanced.
Yeah, the facial animation is definitely better looking.
Yeah. And also I think like the dialogue and kind of the more dramatic scenes are handled a bit better. Some of the stuff with like Dot talking about like who do I date or marry, like what's going on here, like some of that stuff is I thought was actually pretty well done. The action's, you know, fairly cool, but like I didn't really care for how Damon went out, as I mentioned before, and of course the cliffhanger is a bummer.
Right, of course.
So, you know, all in all, I would say season-wise, I would say season four is a revisit, let's say, if you've seen the show before, especially if you've seen the show before and haven't seen season four, which I think they only aired it for like a week on Toonami in like 2001, like long after Reboot, I think, stopped airing. Not positive. not a historian. But, you know, like, if you haven't seen it, like I hadn't, you know, I think it's worth checking out.
Yeah, I feel kind of the same way. Honestly, I wasn't that crazy about season four. To be honest, I think part of that is because I feel like I'm just kind of done with Reboot. Like, I'm kind of sick of watching it and talking about it.
Right, and season three had such a ending. Like, the ending of season three was a real ending. Like, very final.
Yeah, it was definitive. And one of the big problems, actually, that I see with season four, especially in the Damon episodes, is that they have these things that are holdovers from the end of season three that it feels like they just don't know what to do with. The big one, well, there are two big ones for me. The first is Kid Enzo has basically nothing to do through the first three episodes of the Damon arc. He shows up occasionally to make jokes and hang out in Fong's super cool bachelor pad complete with lava lamps.
Fong's fucking bachelor pad is great.
Yeah, it's fantastic. But he doesn't have anything to do, and it seems like the writers just didn't know what to give him to do.
I'd kind of theorize that, like, Kid Enzo coming back at the very end of season three was just kind of like a fun toss away thing that they were going to do. Like, oh yeah, okay,
well of course
we bring it at Kid Enzo, because it's like, I don't know, it'd be kind of funny if we have both him and kind of just highlights the contrast between Enzo as he was as a kid and fucking Matrix, the crazy dark dude.
And it brings some light back into the show at the end by showing,
yeah, it's actually kind of symbolic.
I was a little disappointed, as I said last episode, that Matrix didn't get reverted because of the whole Enzo having a childhood again. But I guess, to an extent, it is Enzo getting a shot at a real childhood, even if it's not specifically Matrix.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah. Enzo still has a chance to live a normal, quote-unquote, life, like, inside a computer.
But because they threw it in for fun, I'm theorizing, you know, when they go on and get another chance to make more Reboot, they're like, oh wait, what do we do with this character? We just have a kid around.
And yeah, no, you know what,
barely it's involved.
It's very much like Back to the Future Part 2, where I believe their name is Jennifer, Marty's girlfriend, gets in the DeLorean at the end of Back to the Future 1 as they fly off into the future, and the writers didn't know what to do with her.
Uh-huh.
In the sequel.
Don't they just knock her out for half of it?
Yeah, she's just knocked out for most of the movie because she kind of screwed up the dynamic of Marty and Doc, and so they got rid of her. That's basically what Kid Enzo is. He's been knocked out with some creepy tool expressly for the purpose of knocking people out, so that he doesn't interfere with the dynamic between the other characters.
Right. Yeah, it's just like, why is this still here? But what was the other holdover? You said he had two.
Oh, it's not so much a holdover, but it's kind of a dramatic problem brought on by the end of season three, which is the whole will they, won't they aspect of Bob and Dot is stupid to continue harping on when season three ends with them kissing. Like,
oh yeah. Yeah, it really seemed to end.
That's mostly, again, in the Damon thing. There's this sort of love triangle between Dot and Hexadecimal and Bob, and Dot is insistent that they're just friends. But I don't know. I don't make out with my friends. Like,
right. And then it switches when Hex gets out of the picture, and then new Bob comes in, and it's like another love triangle.
Well, sure, the love triangle switches. Right. But that's not a problem for me. The problem is that they rolled back that character development because, again, it's like, oh, well, we need this aspect for this to work to an extent. So better keep it up. I mean, hell, it's even setting up that Bob and Dot aren't going to get together at the end of My Two Bobs, because now she's super paranoid that Megabyte could be anyone. Like, that's a thing that's never going to be resolved, because, of course, it never gets resolved in shows. That's not how shows work.
Right.
But it's annoying as shit when it was resolved, basically, and then they have to roll it back because, you know, that's how things work.
Yeah. Which, like, how awkward would that be, too? Like, they make out right when the world comes back to normal, and then they just, like, kind of drift apart after that. Like, it was just like, oh, that was a weird thing we did. That was very impulsive, huh? Well, I'll see you tomorrow.
I mean, yeah. To be fair, I guess that could be the scenario.
I guess,
like,
it could.
I can think of ways to explain it, but it still feels kind of cheap.
Yeah, yeah.
For me. And similarly, like, Matrix is once again just pissy about fucking everything. Like, he's upset that he's taking orders from Bob, which doesn't seem to fit with that character almost at all.
Well, like, it made sense that they had different theories on how to deal with viruses and stuff in the beginning. There is some explanation for that. But yeah, Matrix is kind of pissy for no reason for a bit of season four.
Yeah.
And it's just like,
and what, I mean, it,
can he ever be happy?
Yeah, in a few ways, it just feels like some of the drama is manufactured a little bit.
Yeah,
more than it usually feels, I guess, because obviously it's all manufactured, but it feels like I can see the edges easier here.
It's all on a computer.
Yeah, exactly.
Of course, it's all fake. The whole thing takes place in a computer, Doc.
Yeah, of course. Computers aren't fucking real. So it's all animated. These aren't even real people. How am I supposed to relate?
I love that guy.
Yeah.
It's just fucking stupid.
At any rate, though, I mean, I'm shitting on it a lot. I thought it was okay, but yeah, the total cliffhanger upsets me in a different way then it upsets you, but it is still upsetting to just not have a resolution for a plot line that could have been kind of cool.
Yeah.
I don't know. I mean, I guess a conditional revisit, but this is probably not Reboot at its best, which is a shame because this is Reboot looking the best.
Yeah, right.
So it's too bad that the plot lines themselves aren't maybe as entertaining as, like, season two is. I do think season two is the gold standard for Reboot, with season three coming in slightly behind it.
Yeah, yeah.
Season four is in that spectrum. Obviously, yes, season one's garbage. It's better than that, but it's not great. And it's maybe worth revisiting.
So, taking all of that, Reboot as a whole, I mean, personally, I would say is a revisit. I wouldn't give it a total visit. Like, yeah, Cole, you never heard of Reboot? Check this shit out. It's not going to be weird at all. Like, no. At least if you've heard about it, maybe saw it a little bit as a kid, I would consider checking it out, especially if you're nostalgic for early 3D animation or for Toonami. What do you know? But
Yeah, sure.
And it's and it is it was a lot better than I thought it would be, overall. So yeah, I would give it a revisit as a whole.
Yeah, honestly, looking back at Reboot, I would give it a very, very conditional revisit. Probably, I'm not sure it's really worth checking out. Like, that may be a bit harsh, but I think unless you're really willing to sit down and watch early 2000s TV computer animation, it's not really worth your time. Like, there's better stuff that you can go out and watch for sure.
Right, but I will say, though, that you do get used to the 3D animation. It starts off pretty,
oh,
like...
Oh, for sure.
Oh, God. And it never looks amazing. It actually looks decent by the end of the show. But it's still... Yeah, there's still a little awkwardness, but you get over it. And when you get over it, it really doesn't matter. Season 1's rough regardless, but when you get to,
well,
like,
I think, though,
two,
like... It's hard for me to say because we've been watching the show now for a little over a month. Like,
yeah.
And we started from the absolute base with season 1's bad looking CGI. So obviously compared to season 1, season 3, season 4 look really good.
Yeah.
But I think if I were to come at this, like, if we were to watch it in the other direction, you know? Like, if we were to start with season 4 and then watch it get worse, I don't think I would have been like, oh, this looks good. You know what I mean? Like, coming at it cold, I don't think I would have... I don't think I would say that it looks good. And obviously, you do get used to it, but, like, I didn't like sitting through... pretty much any of season 1. I'm not sure that I would sit through any of season 3 if I didn't, you know, have to for this podcast.
Sure.
So I would say a very conditional revisit. If you really love this show, if you're nostalgic for it, like, yeah, sure, maybe check out some of season 2. But for the most part, I'd say it's pretty skippable. Like, look at some clips on YouTube. Frankly, those are going to give you a good litmus test of whether you can take the look of the show.
Yeah, well, and check out my fanfic. They learn how to do fusion from the Saiyans, and Bob and Enzo become Benzo.
It's a crossover with Reboot and Sailor Moon. Because those, you know, those binomes were Sailor Moon. Also,
that's right.
Kiss,
that's right,
Phantom Sailor in the Park. Because of the Kiss ones. Also, young Indiana Jones. Because Indiana Jones is in it one time.
Yeah, Reboot technically is just a giant crossover fan fiction. If you consider all of those references as in-universe canon.
Oh, and in there, there will be a waiter binome who is... gay, and they make some kind of shitty jokes
we don't have
at his expense.
I guess we do. Yeah, that's perhaps the actual lowest point of the show. It's just like, do we really need gay jokes in this?
Which is a thing that I was thinking about today for some reason as I was walking to buy a drink from my local gas station.
A
Gatorade.
Oh, that's right, because you're sick.
Yeah.
And those apparently can cure you.
Yeah, I'm not sick, nor can they cure you. It's
okay.
Just somewhat good-tasting sugar water with good Brandon.
Oh, okay.
But while walking to the gas station, I was thinking about this, and to an extent, I don't really expect better, you know, and I'm not sure it's necessarily reasonable to expect better from something that was made in the late 90s. Like, yeah, okay, there's going to be a gay joke and it's going to be uncomfortable. But at the same time, it's still marginalizing and shitty. Like, it's not like being in the past, it didn't hurt people, so
sure,
it's still shitty. Like, it's,
I mean, they have a character who's looking basically at it from a modern type, and he makes some hints at,
yeah,
at,
of course,
that. It's not like crazy offensive, but it's still just like shitty, and yeah.
But yeah, to, I guess, close out all of this, reboot season 4, maybe a very conditional revisit. The show as a whole, for me, probably best left in the past. If you're super nostalgic for reboot, maybe give some of season 2 a watch. But for the most part, it's probably a pass.
Nah, the whole show for me is a solid revisit. You gotta check that shit out again. I don't know. So that's what we got. Let's, I guess, go to bets, I guess. It's a stupid bet,
yeah,
and it
so
doesn't matter.
I finally won.
No.
I won this bet,
yeah,
which means that I actually get to choose a new series the first time in 6 months. I finally did it.
Do as many
I get to choose the next thing. I'm super excited. There were 3 episodes that contained flashbacks.
All right, so fucking, what is it next? 400 episodes of Hamtaro?
No. What I'm thinking we're going to do next is the Real Adventures of Johnny Quest. Because,
ooh,
A, there's some CGI, and I want to see how it compares to reboot. My guess, it's going to be shittier.
If I recall, it's a lot worse. And I thought it was amazing as a kid, of course. That's everyone's story with computer graphics.
Sometime I'm going to make a compilation of you saying those exact
words
about this. Like,
I say it about, like,
start.
I've said it on the show, like,
that's how I'm
going to
start. Yeah, exactly. That's my point. But anyway, I want to check it out, and it's not going to be entirely CGI, so we'll get to see some more traditional animation. I'm curious to see how Johnny Quest worked in that era. I don't know. It's a show that I'm actually very curious about, and I vaguely remember. And frankly, the theme music for that show is pretty good. So,
okay,
yeah. But that leaves you for the first time with the Inner Rim. So what do you got for us?
So we've theorized for a bit because there are certain shows that have very, very many episodes, and they don't have a continuous storyline, and they're also old and terrible. We considered perhaps doing a selection of episodes from these huge shows. So I'm thinking Super Friends for a single episode selection of random episodes from Super Friends. See if we can glean from that.
Yeah, right. And I suppose that this is a concept that we'll introduce more in depth, probably with some kind of blog post or something. But essentially, for a show that has more than like 60 episodes that we can't reasonably cover in 5 episodes of the podcast, and also, which is something unlike Dragon Ball Z or I guess Batman the Animated Series, for example, or even Sailor Moon,
it's
kind of hard to justify spending, you know, watching 100 some episodes for us anyway.
Yeah,
so, but we don't want to just leave it, we want to at least talk about it a little bit.
Yeah.
So we're going to do 10 episodes of Super Friends and see what that's like. And then
at the end of
that episode, we're going to kind of make a decision of whether we want to actually pick up the show and watch it in its entirety, which, based on my experiences with Super Friends, I'm going to guess the answer is we won't.
But yeah, probably not.
I guess we'll see. So, yeah, I suppose that about does it. Unless you have any final thoughts on reboot, let's just close it out.
I have one last thing to say about reboot, and that's beep boop reboot.
Beep boop reboot, indeed. This has been a Hyperspace Broadcast. As always, I'm Michael Doak.
I'm Peter Eby.
And one of us might be Megabyte. I don't know. I'm thinking it's you. Well, be sure to revisit us next week.
We'll be checking out some Super Friends.
A correction, Reboot Season 4 was broadcast every Friday from October 19th to November 30th, 2001. Some acknowledgements. The bumpers were taken from Toonami Reboot Season 4 Episode 1 promo, uploaded by DragCoon64, and Toonami Reboot Season 4 Episode 5 promo, uploaded by SlimD716, both on YouTube. The opening and closing music is Vapor Diving by Onatech, off the album Onatech Instrumentals Volume 6. You can find more of their music on SoundCloud, and rights were secured through Jmendo.